what it seems to be.
All right, peace, y'all. Peace, peace, peace. Got some new videos to drop that dropped on the Patreon for y'all. Got the dangers of the controllers, the robotic society. A deeper look into human cloning and the world ID for my clone heads. All right. Also, we got Obama and the Tyra Ferry Campbell conspiracy. All right. These are videos that are also available on the Patreon. If you're not on the Patreon, make sure y'all check those out. And also, we got a hold up. Let me see here. Gotta get my thing together here. All right, and we got my man Backmask and Reveal. Make sure y'all tap in with Backmask and Reveal on YouTube. I know a lot of y'all said that it was difficult for y'all to find his channel. But if you go into my community tab, I'm gonna put the link to his channel in there right after this live. All right. So we're gonna shout a couple people out, man. Get this going, man. We're gonna shout a couple people out. We got some very, very important guests for y'all today. Special interview that we're gonna be breaking down today. Salute the Danklin UFO. Oh, also, I want to shout out someone as well. Hold on, really quick. I want to shout out Isaiah, man. Isaiah Johnson, man. Appreciate you, Isaiah and Xavier. All right. Some people said that they sent me something via PayPal, but I wasn't didn't check it. Salute to what a minute. Hold on, y'all. Sorry, I never get this together. All right, Ryan. Salute to Ryan Conlin, man. Appreciate you. He said, for all that you do. Thank you, Ryan. And salute to Janice Hurd and Edelizan Garcia. He said, you're. Jazzy Fitness, what's going on? Danklin UFO, Gets 187, Starstone, Chef Shardy, Good Times. Maya Yasharala, she said, peace, Jay, what's poppin'? Said, big up from the DMV. Salute to everybody in the DMV. C-Note, the realest, my man, Seen. Brandon Lewis, Kaiser Reagan, Dark Wolf Punk, Gustus, what's going on? Starstone, chill vibes. All right, Malik Smith. Yeah, so we got a special guest today, y'all. For those that don't know, you know, we got a legendary. Hold on, let me make sure everything is right. Legendary artist by the name of Woody Rock. He was with the group Drew Hill. All right. Y'all didn't know Drew Hill made a lot of impact in this R&B world. Like, you know, huge, huge impact in this R&B world. And Woody Rock, man, brother Woody, man, let him know that you in the building, man.
Hey, man, shalom and peace to everybody, man. It's an honor to be here. Just like what you just said about me, that's the way I feel about you in this truth community, man. Like, you just bringing so many great things to light. And bringing things to the people's attention that a lot of us, including myself, like a lot of stuff you speak on, a lot of stuff I miss. So just as exciting as it might be for you to have me on your platform, I'm probably like two times as excited to be here with you, brother, because it's one thing to listen to a brother and watch his broadcast and stuff, but it's another thing to actually be able to speak to that brother, speak to that person, and let them know how much you appreciate the work that they're doing, man. So thank you for having me, bro.
Most definitely, man. Thank you, man. Thank you. We want to give the people some insight about the music industry. Now, for all those that are not familiar, brother Woody Rock was a R&B singer in the group Drew Hill, legendary group Drew Hill. All right. Now, when did you... start singing? At what age do you remember start singing, that you started singing?
Well, I know I sang my first solo when I was 3 years old, because my mom was a choir directress. So as soon as she noticed that I had like a type of vocal ability or whatever, like my cousins used to tell me that when they used to come and visit me, when I was a little baby, they'd come to see me in the crib and stuff, and I'd be humming and making melodies and stuff like that, like before I could talk. But by the time I was three, she had cultivated it to the point where I sung a song called, by James Cleveland, called I Don't Feel No Ways Tired. And I was 3 years old, I was singing, I was sitting on the side of the stage, beating the bongos. And after that, ever since then, my mom had choirs that she had put together. And she had like me and my sister and my cousins, and we all come together and sing at different churches like every Sunday.
Okay, so were you on the church choir as well, or you just would like...
Most definitely. Most definitely, I was on the children's choir from around that time, age 3, up until I was around like 12, and then they have the youth and young adult choir.
Okay.
That they allowed me to get on at about 12, so yeah. In two different churches, because my uncle was minister of music at one church, and the other one was the one that my granny and all my aunts and everybody on my mom's side went to, so...
Okay.
We would switch, and they had different Sundays. Like the first Sunday was Youth Sunday at one church, and the third Sunday at the other. So, was never a problem. We just go back and forth.
Absolutely. Now, I want to ask you a question. Is it what is the connection to gospel, like singing in the choir and church, and then going into the mainstream? All right, because I see a lot of people such as Aretha Franklin, a lot of artists, Kelly Price, they all said they started from the church. So from your point of view, and then they go into what they would call, you know, our elders would call it secular music, right? What would be the connection there? What causes that transition in your opinion?
I feel like church is the ultimate breeding ground. That's where everybody cultivates their gift and their talent. Like you get to know what people respond to, you know, like what people like to hear from you. And oh, it's just like training without going to, like, some people just go to like a vocal trainer and learn to use their gift or whatever. But church is like years and years of training, like it, without free of charge. Like you don't have to pay them like you had to pay a vocal trainer. Like you just in there every week. And if you're good, or if the people like you, then, you know, it's the thing where you get to exercise your gift all the time. Like I know it was a period of time, like in my teenage years, where I sung like one song. And every week, whether it was the week that my choir was supposed to sing or whatever, or if it wasn't, somebody would pass a note up, and one of the ushers would bring the note to the front of the church, and it'll be somebody requesting me to sing this song called Your Grace and Mercy by the Williams Brothers. And it was like every week they requested me to sing that song. So it was like by them, me pretty much knowing they was going to do that, I would try to find like different things to add to it or something different to do in the performance or whatever of it. And so it's just like training. So when you're ready, it's like, look at it like this. With basketball players or football players and stuff like that, like they have their college and their high school training before they go to the league. So by the time they get to the league, then they pretty much ready, with the exception of it's probably, I'm sure, certain things that they might do differently that they had to get adjusted to. But for the most part, their gift is ready because they trained it all those years,
right,
going through school. So for a singer, like church, that's their training. Like that's the high school and their college and all that. So when you get to the league, which is the industry, vocally anyway, you're ready.
Right, right. Now, I want to get into basically the meat and potatoes of this interview. Now, how did you actually form the group Drew Hill? Like, at what age were you guys when y'all came together? And how did you go about forming the group and putting everybody together?
Okay, the way it started was we went to, two of us went to the school called Baltimore City College here in Baltimore. It's a high school, but it's like a college preparatory high school, so they call it, college is in the name of it. But anyway, like the choir director at the school has something called singing telegrams, whereas though like every Valentine's Day, they would have like, you would pay, I think it was like $2 or something, and you have a song request. And you could have somebody, instead of like sending candy to your Valentine or whatever, you could have like some members of the choir come together and go to your classroom and sing for you. So once that happened, it was like a big buzz around the school for me because like I was really like a nerd. Like I looked just like Steve Urkel when I was in high school. So it's like nobody knew I could sing except for like a very select few people. So when by me getting sent around to those classrooms, it was after that, like girls would speak to me and one tell everybody pointing like, don't the little boy didn't know how to sing or whatever like that. So the second year around, no, after that, I just wanted to keep it going, like keep that momentum going. So I picked like two or three guys that I knew personally around the school and not necessarily knew how to sing really well. Some of them did, some of them didn't, but some of them were just cool guys that like girls like. Because I didn't have the image part down. I'm like, man, they ain't really going to like me for the way I look. So I'm going to get some guys that do look, you know, like a little more handsome or whatever, or that they just cool, got swag or whatever you want to call it. And it's like me and those guys just started singing together at the school every day. And from that, different people would come in and out because like once you start doing something, sure, you know, anything that's attracting attention, that other people would want to come and be a part of it as well. So they just knew where we were. Like every day at the school, we'd be either in the courtyard of the school, because in the cafeteria had a courtyard with great acoustics for singing. And then like at the very front of the school, it had like great acoustics. So like me and you might see up to 7 or 8 guys is down there harmonizing, you know. And over time, Cisco came into the group because like he and I went to middle school together. And we knew each other from middle school, but neither one of us knew that the other one of us sang. Like, he used to dance. Him and this guy named Marlo, they used to dance really well. So, like, they used to call Eminem because his real name is Mark. So, it was like, him and the guy Milo used to dance. So, I knew them in middle school for dancing. And I used to draw. He and I used to draw, but I used to rap. Well, I write rap, so I did one performance in school or whatever. But neither one of us, bottom line, neither one of us knew that the other one sang. So he happened to walk through the cafeteria one day because he went to a school right up the street from my school, which is called Mervo. And it was a like a vocational technical school. Like, you know those schools that people go to and they have like test college and stuff like that? That they have the commercials up. What's the school that Lil Romeo did the commercial for?
ICDC College, right. Like a trade school almost, right.
Right, but that's the kind of high school that he went to. So one of his trade, the trade that he was in, required him to come to my school to do some type of work. So he was on his way to do the work and we happened to be in the cafeteria. He just walked through the cafeteria and heard us singing. And he like stopped and listened. Then he looked and he recognized me from middle school. So we like looking at each other. He's like, yo, you sing? I'm like, yeah. You sing? He said, yeah. So then like we were harmonizing. We were singing Boyz II Men, It's So Hard to Say Goodbye to Yesterday. And he was like, yo, would you mind if I put a couple notes in the harmony or whatever, like change a couple notes? So he gave everybody a note to sing as far as the harmony that wasn't the harmony that was on the record, because we had pretty much practiced and memorized that harmony. So he gave us a different harmony and we just like looked at it. All of us just looked at each other and was like, wow, that was dope. Like the arrangement that he did just on the spot was crazy. So from that day on, I don't know how he passed that shop class, because every day he would come up to my school and just sing at the school with me. And it would be like a bunch of us. And then by that time we had like gone to the audience. So like a bunch of girls would come down and whatnot. And then one day a guy named Bravette that I knew brought Nokia to one of the practices. And it's funny because like when you listen to interviews and stuff, he tell everybody that he's the founder of the group. And I like to say that if he founded the group, he founded it the same way that Christopher Columbus founded America, discovered America. Like, cause we was already there. Cause like it was already, the Native Americans was already in America and he discovered it. We was already down there singing every day and he discovered us. So that's where he say he started the group or whatever. But the guy Brevet brought him down and he asked, could he be a part of the group? Could he come and sing with us? So he came down and started singing with us every day also. And it was crazy story real quick. One day, like I told you, we were singing at the courtyard of the cafeteria. So my school is old. It's like a historic school if you look it up. Baltimore City College is like historic since like the 1800s or something like that. And so like the area where we were singing needed some construction done on it. So they had like these construction workers there. And he'll tell you yourself, like, if you listen to interviews, I think the last one that I saw of theirs, I try not to watch it, but people send me everything they do. I don't know if they be trying to stick, get me to say something or try to keep stuff going or whatever, but for whatever reason, people send me all the interviews and stuff. And one I finally gave it a watch was that the one with DC Young Fly and Carlos Miller, the 85 South Show. He said himself that he's not really a singer. So, like, he would do his harmonies and stuff like that, but, like, me and, like, three other guys was the ones doing the bulk of the singing. And so, like, the construction workers liked what they heard, so they started throwing money down off of the scaffolds and stuff. You know this man, mind you, he wasn't doing none of the singing. This man ran and gathered up all the money and then ran out and didn't give none of us none of it. Now, so it's been like that from day one. That's just a little side story to keep in the back of your pocket or whatever. But anyway, we would do that around the school, like every day after school. And at one day, my mom caught wind of it. And mind you, I told you that my mother was a choir director. And she was like real, real heavy into the church. And I'm sure you heard it before from a million other artists. Like, I grew up in one of them households where we wasn't supposed to be listening to any music besides gospel music. And when she found out that I was not only listening to it on the low, but singing it too, one day she actually physically removed me from in front of the school from singing in front of a girl face. So that's how serious and adamant she was about me not doing it. So eventually, you know, like, they started getting more talent shows and things like that. Like, as long as we were only singing at the school, I was a member in great standing, founding member in great standing. But when it came to the point where they would do like talent shows and things of that nature that weren't at our high school, that required me to go somewhere else other than school, I basically wasn't able to be a part of the group anymore. Yeah, so it's like, and it's crazy because like recently, I never really believed in what people call like generational curses and stuff like that. But it's like, it's wild because my mom, like I said, she was a choir director. And what she would do is go to like a small church, be like a small church, and they didn't really have a youth choir or things like that. And she would put together their youth choir. And then as soon as they got to the point where like at first, like nobody would be messing with these kids. It'd be like a bunch of kids like on those movies, like not really like Lean On Me, but of something similar to that, like where it'd be like a bunch of kids that nobody thought much of or wasn't really paying no attention anyway. And by the time she'd get them harmonizing and get them singing and sounding good, and then once everybody see their potential, then everybody else around would like plot to take her choir away from her, you know? And like, she's the type of person like me that never like conflict or any type of beef or anything like that. So rather than to sit there and argue with anybody, she'd just walk away. And then end up going to another church and doing the same thing for them. And then the same thing will happen there. So I kind of feel like that generational curse of her doing that with the choirs and stuff, like it passed along to me because like I started a group and eventually not at that, but really from there, she was the one that took me away from it. It's like I started the group and then she took me away from it. And then right after she didn't allow me to sing with them anymore, is when they met their manager. And then shortly after that, they got a record deal. Not the record deal that you got, everybody would know them for having, but they had another record deal. They met the president of a record label out of DC called University Records. And then he was able to facilitate them a developmental deal with Atlantic Records. And this is when we were still in high school. But the label then, they said that they really didn't know what to do with them because like the way that this guy, he was like real big on the Philly sound and Motown and the Temptations and things like that. So you got a group of guys that's like 17 or 18 years old, but they singing like the Temptations. So they was like, we don't really know what to do with them, you know? So they signed them to a developmental deal, which a lot of times record labels used to do back in the day, like when they can recognize your talent and your potential, but they don't really know what to do with you. But at the same time, they don't want to just leave you out there. Somebody else snatch you up. So they sign you to a deal basically so you can't go nowhere. And then actually gave them some money to buy like recording equipment and stuff like that so that they could basically just like work on their craft. and come up with songs and things like that. So it was nothing for them to come back to the school and come, because after that time, like, one of the only other member that went to my school was Nokio. So he ended up switching schools and going over to a school called Frederick Douglass over in West Baltimore. And that's where he met Kaz, the fourth member that joined the group. So, like, they would come back up to the school to visit me and play me, like, the songs that they were working on in the studio and stuff like that. And I used to be mad at my mom. I used to go home and say, "See, Mom, you wanna let me sing with them? Now they in the studio, now they doing records. They come up school with fresh clothes on and tell me about shows where as though they opened up for Chris Tucker, like comedy shows and hip hop shows was where they were mostly featured and stuff. So they were doing all this type of stuff all through school. So finally, when I graduated school, the summer that I graduated high school, they called me and was like, "Man, do you think your mother would let you sing with us if we became a gospel group?" So, you know, because they, like everybody else that we talked about earlier, Aretha Franklin, all the greats, Jodeci, everybody started the church. So it's like they had gospel roots the same way that I had gospel roots. So they was like, "Do you think your mom would let you sing with us if we became a gospel group?" So bam, I asked her, and next thing you know, we were a gospel group. And we would go around from church to church in Baltimore City, and we would sing for people. And they, you know, like, they loved us. We basically were in church, but we didn't look like everybody that come to church to sing. Like, we'd be in church with, like, hockey jerseys and Timberland boots and stuff on. Like, we basically, Jodeci was, like, one of our biggest influences. So we would try to dress like Jodeci and sing gospel songs that we made up, but they would sound like they have a flavor to them, like a Jodeci song. So we were, like, a hit around the city, like, doing that.
Now, this was before the deal with Def Jam or Def Soul at that time, right? Island Def Jam?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
We was with Island Black Music first, and then we went to Def Jam. But no, this was before all of that. This is when they still had to deal with Atlantic, their development deal. But at some point, that deal expired. Mm. I don't know if that was, I think that was right before they called me. Like, after from them doing the talent shows and stuff, and they had to deal with Atlantic. But they got out of that deal, and that's when they weren't doing anything with that. So then we were doing the gospel, and then they got a call from the guy who was the president of the record label, University Music. And he called them, like, one day, I think we were in practice, and he happened to call when we were all sitting together. And he asked them, would they try R&B one more time? So I'm, you know, like, I'm in it on the strength that we sing gospel music. Like, that's the only reason why my mother let me sing with them is because we sing gospel music now.
Right.
But they got that call, so I had to have the conversation with my mom. She had to have the conversation with our pastor at the time. I was like, "Can we talk to the pastor? And if he say I can do it, would you let me do it?" And I kind of had a feeling that he was going to say that I could, because his son was a jazz musician. And he used to be over in Germany. He lived in Germany playing music, and it wasn't church music. So I was like, he probably say I could do it. So we had a conversation with him. He said it was okay or whatever. So then she gave me her, you know, her blessing to go ahead and do it. But by that time, the dynamic was different. Like I said, when I first came into the group, when the group first started, I started the group. So I had, you know, like, leeway, like, as far as, like, writing songs, as far as singing and everything. So by the time I came back, one guy who had left the group, he wasn't really a singer. So when he left, they basically asked me to come back in his place. And so, like, his place wasn't really to do a lot of singing. He just was, like, harmonizing. And he was one of the guys that I told you about from the beginning. He was just cool. You know, like, he was just a guy that, like, ladies liked, and fellas fool with him, like, he's just a cool dude or whatever. So I'm guessing that they ain't bring me back as who I originally started as. They brought me back like, you work at a job and you might leave the job, and when you come back, they don't put you back at the position that you had when you were there before. They bring you back in at an entry level. See what
right.
I'm saying?
Right.
If that makes sense. So, like, I'm back, but I'm not leaving those songs. I'm not the songs that I used to write. Like, it was a point where, so I used to write the songs, but I really was the first one out of us to really start bringing songs to the table that I had written. And everybody loved them because they was like, these sound like the songs on the radio. You know, and it was just stuff that I had written, because I had written songs all my life.
So they basically made you.
Back,
go ahead.
Say it again.
No, I was gonna say they basically made you start from the beginning, in a sense.
Right, right. So it's like, because, and I mean, part of it I understand, just like, because they did like do the trenches and stuff like that. Like they went and won on Apollo Amateur Night, not Showtime at the Apollo, but like the actual Amateur Night, where you come there with no audience, no TV audience, but it's a real audience, you know, and you might get booed off the stage or whatever like that. They came, they went and did that. They were in the newspaper here in Baltimore, but that was due to, I mean, it was due to their talent, but it was also due to the fact that the guy who was their manager's family owned the newspaper called the Afro-American. It was like a black newspaper in Baltimore. So like, they had done a lot of stuff when I wasn't there. So when I came back, I was like treated like I was just like a new member just off the street. You see what I'm saying?
Man.
So but it's like, the thing of it is, it was like kind of like confusing, because it's like y'all asked for me to come back. Y'all even became a gospel group so that I could come back. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's like, y'all know what I'm capable of, but why y'all, you know, like, why am I getting treated like a, I don't know, just like anything at this point. So it was like totally different when I came back from Trump. But I hung on hoping that things was going to get better, you know?
Right. So now let me ask you this question. The name Drew Hill, were you guys always named Drew Hill? Because Drew Hill, I believe, is a part of Baltimore, which I have family in that area. So did you guys always come up with that name, Drew Hill?
No. Our name, we had a bunch of different names, but the two that stick out for me the most that I can remember were three. We had 14 karat harmony, like 14 karat gold is considered to be like a very pure form of gold. So it was like basically just meant like pure harmony. That's the first name that we had. And then we became Legacy, which stood for letting every generation encourage the coming youth. It was like an acronym, but that was our name, Legacy. But you know, the label didn't kind of like that because it rhymed with Jodeci, and we already like looked up to them real bad, and our sound was kind of like this, so they didn't want the people to think that we was just like a clone or whatever of them, so they wouldn't let us use that. So then they came up with the Storm, and each one of us was supposed to be a different element of a storm. Like one with us was like the wind, one was the rain, one was the thunder, and one was the lightning or whatever. But our name was never, and we had a couple other names, but our name was never Drew Hill. Drew Hill is a park in Baltimore. It's called Druid Hill Park. And because what happened was, like, the night before we went up, and I'm pretty sure you're familiar with the story of how we got out there, like how we came up to Island Black Music and sung for the president.
No, I never heard
the studio
that.
The same night.
Yeah, I never heard that story. You got to inform me.
Oh, yeah. Like, we basically, like, once we got back together and got the blessing, I got the blessing from my mom to do it, and we sung R&B. The president of the label, University Music, his name is Hak Islam, he called us. First, we went to Interscope, and we sung for everybody in Interscope, Jimmy Iovine and all of them, and they basically like promised that they were going to give us a deal, but they were like moving really, really slow with the paperwork. So during the time that we were waiting to hear back from them, he got a call from Island Black Music, which was run by a guy named Hiram Hicks, who used to work with New Edition and a couple of other artists, and they had just put out a soundtrack for a movie called Don't Be a Menace to South Central While Drinking Your Juice in the Hood. Like, they had put out that soundtrack. So then they were working on a new soundtrack for a movie called Eddie at the time. And so they brought us up. They asked to have a meeting with us. So we came up, and we sang an original song of ours. And right while we were singing the song that we were singing for them, the president of the label started singing the song Tell Me, because he basically could hear our voices on that song. Like, we thought he was being rude, because we sitting there singing, and he's sitting there singing, we singing, we singing, and he started singing Tell Me. So when we finished the song, he let us finish, and then he brought in the tape of Tell Me the way that it was. And it was actually Dave Hollister on there singing it. And he was killing it, because, you know, Dave Hollister is a monster vocally. So he was on there singing it. And he asked us, could we hear ourselves singing that? And we like, heck yeah, because that's the same flavor. Like, you know, Dave Austin and Jodeci and all them, they all tight. And they have like that similar type of sound, like that church sound from real. So we were hype. And so he told us, like, y'all not going home tonight. Came back like, y'all not going home tonight. Y'all going to the Hit Factory. And y'all going to record this song because it's a soundtrack. Get ready to come out. And basically the reason why he replaced Dave Hollis's version with our version is not saying that, you know, like, definitely not taking anything away from Dave Hollis as a singer, because he wanted the coldest. And all of our opinions, you know, everybody in the group, all of our opinion, he wanted the coldest. But the fact that Dave Hollis was signed to a different label, and they saying we could have this song on a group of artists that signed right to our label. So if y'all sign with us, y'all can go to the studio tonight and record this song. This y'all's, and it's going to be on this soundtrack that's about to come out. So that's basically how we got our deal. We went up there one day, knocked that song out, and got our deal.
Now, it's so ironic that you say that, because the name Drew Hill, which is the term for Druid Hill, right? Like, this is why I ask you, like, who came up with that name? Because we all know that a druid is basically a wizard, right?
Right.
When we're in the music business. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, no, I'm sorry.
No, I want to elaborate on the name, because the reason why, like, I want to also ask you this. How old were you guys when you made that song, Tell Me? Like, were you guys young at the time?
Yeah, we were, like, all of us were between the ages of 18 and 20.
Okay.
I was 19, so yeah, we were all between 18 and 20.
Okay.
We went up and recorded.
Now that's what I want to go into. Like, I understand the name, right? But mm-hmm. who was the one that said, hey, you know what? We're going to use this name, Drew Hill. You know what I'm saying? And then, because it all has a significance, especially in the music business. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Now, what happened was, like I said, we didn't have a name. So, like, they were getting everything together to put the record out. Like, we got the vocals recorded. We knocked that all out that same night. And everything was in order for it. But they said, y'all don't have a name. So, like, for however it happened, the member Nokio would go, he was like basically the one that had the rapport with the record label. So they stayed on the phone. The way he told us, they were on the phone for like hours trying to find out a name for us, him and the president of the record label. And so he said that he told him, like, think of something that, like, if you say this name, then people will automatically know that you're talking about Baltimore. So they came up with, between him and between those two people, I don't know which one of them said it, but they were saying that, like, it's a park in Baltimore that, like, everybody at the time, everybody would go to that park on the weekends. Like, people would get their cars shined up and stuff like that. Like, I'm pretty sure it's like a place like that in every city.
Right.
But people would get their cars shined up, and girls be out there in the summertime with their little shorts on or whatever, you know. Everybody just ride through and holler at girls and just have fun all day long. So they came up with that and said that was the name of the group. When they came back to the rest of us with that, we was mad. He's like, yo, that sound local. Ain't nobody gonna like us. They ain't gonna think we nothing. They just gonna think we still just some local, whatever. You know, like, we didn't like it.
Right.
But we didn't know, of course, what you just said just now. I didn't find that out till probably like last year or a year before or something. Like, I'm just finding that out, you know. But we didn't know. But between some, I don't know, that just became our name right when they, you know, right before the record came out, because they needed a name to put down there who was singing the song.
Wow.
That's the way that it was brought to us.
Wow. Now, I want to get a little controversial, man. How long would you say you've been in the industry?
Since 96.
Okay. Now, have you seen anything that was strange in your opinion as far as with being in the industry?
You know, it's crazy. I never personally, I see a lot. Like, I only heard stories and things like that because of the fact that they put me, the image that they gave me or whatever, as far as like the perception through the industry, they would tell everybody, like, even in our original bio, like, and I'm sure somebody could find it online or whatever, they said that I was Gabriel. They was like, Woody is our angel. is that he's Choir Boy. He's Gabriel, you know, like he's just the angel, the good guy out of the group. So it's like a lot of things that probably went on. I wasn't invited to it because everybody had that perception that I was the good one. So it's like a lot of stuff that people probably saw or whatever like that. Like, I ain't seen none of it. It wasn't until I left the industry and had time to be at home, because like it's a scripture in the book of Sirach that says, like, through opportunity of little business is when a man becomes wise. Like, it would be little stuff that I would peep. And then, like, by the time when I got home, then I would see different things and start connecting dots. Like, that's why this was like that. And that's why that was like that. Even the fact that our symbol for the group became that dragon. And if you read the book of Revelation, they say that old dragon, which is the devil, you know? So it's like, we weren't, that wasn't our decision. Like, a lot of stuff was just placed on us. And at being that young and being like ignorant in the pure sense of the word ignorant, not ignorant like we think of, that you just like, it's a dummy and you don't want to know nothing or whatever, but like real pure ignorance just means you don't know, you know? And it's like, we didn't know. So like, basically our photo shoot for our first album was in a Chinese restaurant, and which to the Chinese culture is no disrespect to anyone in Chinese culture, because, but at the same time, I'm not, or Asian culture, I'm not Asian. So I wouldn't know that. But they say that a dragon is like a symbol of good luck. But like, all I know is from the scriptures, it say right there in Revelation that the dragon is the devil, you know? Right. But so they had our first photo shoot in a Chinese restaurant, and it was like a dragon on the wall behind us. And so when we went to do our first Showtime at the Apollo, the one that was actually recorded for everybody to, you know, like for the TV series or whatever, they say, y'all need a logo or something behind y'all on the stage. And so they was like, what do y'all think about that dragon that was on the table at the restaurant, on the wall at the restaurant behind y'all? So we like, hey man, whatever. You know, we just want to be on Apollo, the legendary Showtime at the Apollo, where we see all our favorites perform at. So if that's what y'all want us to have behind us when we on there, then okay. I don't care. I know that was my consensus, and it wasn't until Jazz was the first person that brought to my attention the whole thing about, yo, the dragon, the devil, the Bible. I'm like, oh, yo, it is. But by that time, we already had, you know, like, then they gave us the whole spiel about that our cultures, it means good luck and good and wisdom and all this other stuff, you know?
Right.
But once again, that wasn't something that was our decision to have. It wasn't nothing that we said, let's say, y'all, we want this. We ain't come to the table as with that name or with that being our logo.
Right.
It was something that was given to us by people who probably were in the know and knew what they was doing.
Right. Now, a subscriber of my channel, Rashad West, said, he said, yo, Woody's gospel album was fire. He said he had it around 05, 06. So people really did go out and purchase the album. Salute to everybody in the chat, man.
Thank you, bro.
Yeah, man.
Thank y'all, man.
Yeah, he said is that Woodrow? He's live right now. Yeah, stay in Stoic said, is that Woodrow? Is he live right now? Yeah, we live right now.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Right here. Right here with my brother Jay, man.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
Right here with y'all. Salute. Peace and love to everybody that's listening, man. Everybody that's turned in.
Now, we already know a lot of these entertainers. They come out like one person in particular, I'll say, is a guy by the name of Boot Gang, and then he's got a girlfriend by the name of Whoa Vicky, right? And they talk about a lot of these industry parties. Now they're followers of Christ, which is good, in my opinion. When we see these type of things, right, involving at these parties, I've even mentioned some events that I've been to that have been suspect, in my opinion. In your opinion, what is the reason why they have these type of events, and what is the cause of it?
Man, like I said, I've never been to one, but right. I've heard like the same stories that everybody else heard. The only party I ever been to that was wild was the How Can I Be Down Summit in Miami.
Right.
And people actually started shooting in that party.
Right, right.
Like, they actually started shooting while it was a group on stage performing. I won't say their name.
Oh,
because
man,
it's kind of like embarrassing what happened, but like they were on stage singing, and out of nowhere, like people just shots just started to ring out. And like they ran off the stage and it became evident that they was lip syncing because all the singing kept going, but it wasn't nobody on the stage. And it's like me and Cisco was in the party, so we sitting there. We just went back by the bar, like tried to back away from where the shots was coming. Like we were standing at the bar and literally, just like the Matrix show, it was like bullets whizzing past both our heads. Wow. And it just so happened to be a dude in there that I ended up meeting and ended up working with later on and like doing some music with him, a guy out of Louisville, Kentucky named Sean Sanders. I forget the name that he went by, like his musical name or whatever. But he's like a big guy, and like on the first album, I was small. Like I probably was like 145 pounds, and Cisco was probably like 135 pounds, and this guy was like a giant of a man. He was like 200 some pounds, and like over 6 feet. He picked both of us up because like we were both like, I don't want to even think we were scared. Like we both was just like looking like we thought this was a movie or something. Like you know how the guy on Biggie first CD on Warning, when Puffy was like, nigga, is that a red dot on your forehead?
Right,
and he
yeah.
was like, no, nigga, is that a red dot on your forehead? Right. That's how we was like looking at each other. Like, he's like, yo, did you see that? Like, yo, a bullet just flew past your head. I'm like, yo, one just flew past your head. That's how we literally standing there in the party. And the big guy just came and picked both of us up and like threw us over his shoulder and ran out the building with both of us, you know? So that's the wildest party that I've ever been to.
Man.
But like those other parties, you know, like I listened to interviews and stuff, like shout out to the brother, what's his name? The young boy that rap from New York. What's his name? I said it to you the other day and it's escaping me right now, but he did that whole interview where like the stylists and stuff like that, like they test out to see which guy don't give no resistance.
Oh,
when
oh
like
yeah, yeah.
Salute to
Ali Vegas. Ali Vegas. Yeah,
yeah him. Yeah, yeah. Shout out to him, man, because like exactly the way he described some of that stuff, I seen some things like that, like with stylists and stuff, and like the people that the stylists were favorable with, those were the people that ended up going to those parties, and they told me like basically similar stories to what everybody else say. Like when Cat Williams came out with that whole, that first one, that Professor Albert,
yeah.
like when he was telling yep. that story of who yep. he's seen in all the different rooms and stuff like that.
Yep.
I've had people that I know come back and tell me stories like that about things that they seen, but it's like, I never was invited. And at the time, I'm thinking like, dang, I must not be cool enough to get invited to all the big things and stuff like that. But looking at hindsight, I'm looking like that was the most high looking out for me. Well, I was never invited to that stuff. But yeah, I definitely know that they exist, but I can't speak from a firsthand experience to saying that I've ever been in one. Like, yeah, I definitely know that stuff be going on. Heard right. firsthand that it does go on, and it's definitely wild.
Now they said, Tristan Thompson said, what about the Drew World Order? That was an interesting cover. Were you around for that?
Yeah, that's the last project that I actually was a part of. And that's another thing, like whenever it would be those things naming, it would be Old Boy and the record company that would have meetings. And then they'd basically come back and dictate to the rest of us what it is.
Wow.
He'd go and talk to the record company and be like, all right, this is our name. And then he'd go and talk to the record company, all right, just the name of the album, you know?
So you guys didn't have creative control over as far as with the music or the clothes you guys wore. It was mainly like the labels making decisions for you guys, right?
Put it this way, it was supposed to be like a voting system, you know? And it's like during the time that like I said, when I first started it, I was like definitely one of the decision makers. Like if I see something, they're like, yeah, we're going with that. But once I came back, the position that I was in, I was basically the outcast, because like everybody else would vote. They say, what's this? And we voting. And everybody else would raise their hand and say, hey, let's do it. And I'd be the only person that sometimes had some resistance or whatever. If one person had some resistance, then that one person would be outvoted, you know? So if somebody come with an idea, and but by that time that album came out, that third album, that Drew World Order, I didn't want to be there anyway. The only reason I was there is because in order for me to put out the gospel album that my brother in the chat just mentioned, in order for me to be cleared and free to release that album, I had to agree to come back and do another album with the group.
Wow.
So by that time, I basically just didn't care. So I was just like, all right, this is what it is. This is what you got to do. All right, this is going to be the name of it. All right, whatever, you know?
Right, right.
And at the same time, like I said, like I really had like an epiphany, like after the fact. Like I heard one of the guys in an interview, it's like, when you left, you told us you left for this reason. And then when we heard you do an interview, you said all this other stuff. And the reason why is because I didn't know any of this other stuff when it was going on. Like, you know, you have a piece of where you know something feel funny,
right?
But you can't really put your finger on why it feel funny.
Right.
And
right.
Then later on, you get educated and you realize it's almost like you got a disease or something, like you got the flu or whatever. And you know your throat feels scratchy and you know you don't feel good, but that's all you know is that you don't feel good. And then when you go to the doctor and they thoroughly check you out, then they tell you it's a name for why you felt like that. You see
right.
what I'm saying?
Right.
So
right.
All I knew is all my years doing what we were doing, I knew that it was certain things that didn't sit well with me, but I didn't know why it didn't sit well. I didn't understand why stuff was going the way it was going. And then like the years with an S on it that I was sitting home and not doing that and really just sitting and learning, because I took like 3 years from 2008 to 2011. I didn't even work anywhere. I just like studied and right. read and watched videos and watched different teachings and stuff like that, you know? So that's when I learned this stuff. So that's why I started speaking about it, because I had names to put on stuff by that time. Whereas though before, I just know I ain't like how stuff was. So when that title Drew World Order didn't mean nothing to me when it was the title of the album. But then when I started studying and I found out what it really was, like a play on words for, then I was like, oh, that's what that was. Mm. But then what people say now, I see what you did there.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I was very ignorant at the time. Like, I didn't know nothing about none of this stuff. And I had an ex-girlfriend who used to try to teach me this stuff. But at that time, my attitude was like very arrogant. And I didn't want to, not arrogant as far as just like how I treated people. I was always extra nice to people, but I just didn't. I felt like I knew everything. And the whole time I didn't know nothing. But so whenever somebody would try to teach me something that I didn't know anything about, rather than me just being humble enough, like I learned later, wisdom is sometimes saying, I don't know.
Right.
But at that time, I didn't have that wisdom to say that I didn't know. So when she tried to tell me all this stuff, I'd be like, oh yeah, girl, I know all about that. You waste your time talking to me about that. Now, please, go ahead somewhere. But the whole time, I ain't know none of it. So by the time I found it out, that stuff was already done, you know? But right. definitely looking at it now, I definitely see the point, brother or sister, whoever that was, that just asked the question. I definitely see that was some wild stuff.
Now, you had left the group to do your gospel album, correct?
Mm-hmm.
What was the difference between the gospel field and the mainstream field? Because a lot of people tend to think that when you go into the gospel era of music or the gospel sector of music, right, it's more righteous. This is what they, you know, people assume. It's more righteous. In that form of business, that line of business, is it any different from, you know, the R&B and parties and hip hop things? You know, is it more of a righteous sector of music?
Man, from my experiences, and from recently, I just saw a clip where Kelly Price went live and talked about it also, and I'm pretty sure it's other artists that have done the same. If not, they probably should, because the gospel world to me is worse than the secular, quote unquote secular world, because at least in the secular world, everybody tells you who they are, and some of them people not even like that for real life, but you got people that'll tell you, I'm a thug, I'm a killer, you know, the female, I'm a savage, I'm a hoe, I'm a freak, you see what I'm saying? So you know who you get. And it's like their music basically goes along with their persona or whatever. You know, like you're freaking, then you got even like some of these new artists, they'll tell you that they love the devil or whatever, and they'll sit there, throw up their devil horns and, you know, just be who they are, openly. In the gospel world, you got a bunch of people that live and act just like the ones in the secular world, but them same ones be the main ones crying and falling out on the floor and acting like they love the Lord so much behind in front of everybody. You see what I'm saying? But then when you go back to the hotel, it's the same type of wild parties and stuff going on. Like, I never, the whole time that I was in the R&B world, I never felt like really I needed security. Like, I felt like the fact that they paid for each one of us to have an individual bodyguard, I felt like that was all for image purposes when it came to me, because wasn't nobody worried about me like that. And the ones that was worried about me, I was basically like the type of person, like, the shout out to the member Scholar that came in on the third album, he used to call me the ambassador. He was like, you the one that basically is like the link between the celebrities, which is the rest of the group, and the fans, because you the one that's touchable. You the one that's approachable. Like, you'll walk the streets with the fans. You'll go in the mall or whatever, sneak off without your security or whatever, and just be amongst the people. And you'll be the one to go over here and bring somebody over and get them to be able to take a picture with everybody else. Like, that was my thing. So I never felt like I needed security, because I ain't felt like nobody trying to do nothing to me. When I got over there in that gospel world, felt like I needed security. Because a lot of guys, without being offensive to, you know, like, whatever's going on in the world nowadays, and everybody says it's cool, so I guess it's cool or whatever, but, you know, like, a lot of the guys in the gospel world, for lack of a better way to put it, they don't like girls. They like guys too.
They was gay.
So it's like...
They was gay.
Exactly. So you go to, like, the gospel music conventions and stuff like that, and you got guys with camcorders where, as though, like, you used to see, like, videos from Freak Nick, where guys walk up with cameras and try to walk up the girls and try to put the camera underneath their skirt and try to video record their butts so they touch eyes when they walk past and stuff like that. You walk through the gospel music convention, you see guys with cameras set up try to get you on camera as you walk past. You'll meet a guy in the lobby of the hotel, you'll be like talking just like how we talking now, like, hey, what's up, brother? My name's such and such, and I do beats or whatever like that. You should have me on your next project. Then you call the brother when you get back up to your hotel room, or you give them the number to your hotel room where as though they could call you so y'all can talk about the beats or whatever. And you get a call in your room and they be like, hey, this is Shirley. I'm like, yo, I ain't meet any females today. Who, you met me downstairs? I'm like, I ain't meet no females downstairs. Who this guy? No, it's me, Shirley. And this nigga talking about, hey, you know?
Whoa, yeah.
But this is all what's going on in the gospel world. And then on top of that, it was like the first time I ever got finessed out of money. Like, I definitely got finessed out of a lot of money on the R&B side, but it was always indirectly. It was due to some contract that I was ignorant and I didn't know what I signed or whatever like that. But as far as like, in to your face finessed out of some money, it was a guy, it was a gospel group by the name of Men of Standard that did a duet with me on my gospel album called The Question Is. We remade one of the Wiener songs. So one of the members of that group, I think he's singing with Kirk Franklin now, his name is Isaac Carey. He called me like almost in tears, talking about, oh man, Jeff ain't give me my money yet for the feature that we did on y'all. And we got to go over to London tomorrow and I ain't got no money. So I told my manager at the time, I said, hey, that's what we going to do. Cut him a check out of my personal money and give him what he was going to get paid for that feature. Give him how much he was going to get paid for that feature on my record. And then when you get the money back from Def Jam, then you give me the money back. And he's like, oh, yeah. This was in 1999 when we recorded that album. This is 2023 and I still ain't seen that money.
Man.
And this is a gospel singer.
Man.
You see what I'm saying? Like, these guys, they had a weed room, like a designated, and don't get me wrong, like, I'm basically... I believe the Bible as it's written, as opposed to what they, you know, like teaching some different churches and stuff like that. And you know, there's some people that's Hebrew that believe, you know, they say that weed's from a care or whatever like that. But then other people point to that scripture in Genesis 1 and 29 that say, behold, I give you every herb bearing seed, you know, like for your use or whatever. So it's like, I don't judge nobody that's smoking weed, but right. I'm talking about what line up with your set belief system of what you say you believe. See
right.
what I'm saying?
Right.
Just like I believe in, you know, I'm Hebrew, so a lot of Hebrews believe that, you know, polygyny is fine to have like more than one wife or whatever. So I don't have no problem with a brother that got more than one wife, but I do think it's weird if you belong, if you're not a person that say you believe in polygyny and you believe that you are like church Christian and you got married in a Christian church, and you got a whole bunch of women, then I'm like, yo, I ain't got no problem with you anyway. That's your business. But I'm just saying, like, why don't you just come on and be a Hebrew and say you pay for Lizzie can do it and don't got to be sneaky with it. Like, do it. So I just basically, like, be who you say you are. See what I'm saying? So it's like for the Christian churches, it was supposed to be a Christian church tour. Why is it a weed run where everybody's going to smoke weed at?
That's interesting.
And why is it, like, a lot of, due to the fact, what I said earlier, a lot of guys don't like girls, but they'll have a girl with them so that people don't question them. You see what I'm saying? Like, people be like, oh, yeah, he funny. Ain't like, no, he not. You don't see how bad his wife is? Ain't nowhere in the world he funny. But they say they call them beards, where there were certain females that specifically for that reason, so people won't question them. They have this bad female. But then when you get behind closed doors, them women still have needs. They still want to be seen about. So they might come in your room and y'all might be talking about styling or whatever, and they might be like, oh, I like you, how you put that outfit together. I'm like, cool. I was like, I just went shopping. You want to see what I picked out? And then before you can even open the bag and show what clothes you just picked out, they close it off and on the foot of your bed. Man. You see what I'm saying? That's the gospel world. That ain't the secular world that I'm talking about. Like, you expect things like this to go down in the secular world, but when you get on that gospel side, like even some of the executives from the gospel side, like I went to church with one lady that was supposed to be like an executive of the gospel label that I was on, and she's like watching me to see when she should stand up and when she should clap. Like, she basically just looking at me and doing everything I was doing. Like, she ain't know to do that because she probably wasn't even a church regular for real, you know?
Right.
Had a boyfriend on the tour that was like a member of one of the choirs and stuff like that. It's just like, you just don't expect to see that stuff.
Man.
Yeah, like, you thinking it's a safe space. Like, oh, I'm over here with people that think like me and it's going to be easy for me to walk a pure walk. And it was like even harder to walk a pure walk on the gospel side than it was on the secular side.
So mom kept you out of the R&B world, you know. Assuming that you would be better off in the gospel world, but you came to find out.
No,
later
she knew
on
the gospel world wasn't right. She ain't want me in the industry, period.
Oh,
she knew that the gospel world wasn't right because she used to take a group of children to the gospel music workshop every year. And she told me that she used to take, like, I got uncles, and like most of my uncles, they all passed on now, but like the majority of my uncles on my mom's side were all musicians. Like, they're ministers of music at different churches all over the city. I come from a really musical family. But my one uncle, he wasn't really big on, he said he ain't really like the piano lessons, he ain't like the practice. He sung a little bit, but that wasn't really his thing either. But he was like over 6 feet tall, and he was like a military man. He was like a Marine. So she would take him, when she took the choirs, just to go to the bathroom with the boys at the gospel music convention, because she, at that time, she said they had guys, and they used to call them body snatchers, and they'd be like waiting in the bathroom for little boys to come in there, and they'd like fondle them and do weird stuff to them and stuff like that. So she knew that even way back then.
Wow.
But she didn't really want me in the music industry, period. Like, she tried to protect me from the world. Like, I was really not trying to brag on myself or nothing, but I was like really smart when I was little.
Right.
And I could talk at a really young age. And so they used to have a TV show called That's Incredible, where they would put kids on or people on that just did stuff that was out of the ordinary. And all of her friends used to be like, you should put him on, That's Incredible. That baby talking like that, you should put him on, That's Incredible. But at the same time, it was a lot of kidnappings going on at the time. So she was like, she felt like if she put me on a TV show, that would more so make me a target for, you know, like to be kidnapped or whatever like that. So that's why she kept trying to protect me from everything.
Wow, man.
Even up until I was a grown man, I used to still have to check in and stuff, even when the group was out. When I came home, and she know I was home, like, that's why I was kind of happy to be on the road, because I did have some freedom to do a little bit of something.
Right.
But when I came home, like, even I'm grown, I'm 19, 20 years old, well, grown by people's standards. I don't think now you're grown until you're like 35 or so.
Wow.
I heard some studies from Dr. Boyce Watkins and them was talking about that. But I mean, I'm legally grown, where so I can do stuff. And she still was like, oh no, I still had to check in every night. They'd come and check on me and all that type of stuff. So, yeah, she tried to protect me, did her best to protect me from the world. But, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at least she did that, man. I just seen a clip of Usher, and he was on the Howard Stern show, right? And he spoke about, Howard Stern asked him about these P. Diddy parties, you know, when he was younger, when he was like 14 years old. And it's so crazy because he said his parents didn't even know he was attending these parties. You know what I'm saying? Wow. So it was kind of like, you know, he was just out there. And no telling, we don't know, we can't make speculation, but there's no telling what actually, you know, happened or took place while he was around in that vicinity. You know what I'm saying? So,
Usher mother cussed me out one time when we were in California, like around the time when, you know, when You Make Me Wanna came out.
Right.
This is around the time when, like, he first came back on the scene, like, at his first album. So, like, I'm a fan of Usher from his first album, the one that he made when he was with Puffy and them, with had the songs with Devontae Swing and all the Can You Get With It and all that on there. Right. So I ran into him at the airport one day, and we just, like, started talking, had a cool little conversation. So then we ended up staying at the same hotel in California. And it was a group of girls that we had met the night before at one of our shows. So it was, like, a girl that came to the hotel to see me, and she had, like, three girls with her. He came with girl, I guess, probably seeing if any of the guys in the group wanted anybody to hang out with or whatever. So she just had a couple girls with her, but they already had their crew of girls. Everybody in the group already was straight. They already had their crew of girls, whoever they was going to be with for the night. So he happened to see them, and the girl told him, mind you, this not superstar Usher that's doing the Super Bowl like now, because then if he's seeing some girls coming to my room, they probably like, Woody, never mind, we going up here with you, Ursh. But at this time, he was just coming back on the scene just like we were. So he was like on a kind, like almost like an even playing field. So when he said something to one of the girls, they told him like, oh no, we on our way to see Woody or whatever. So he got my room number and called down the room. He said, hey man, he used to talk real like a little smart little kid, like a studious little kid. Said, hey man, think you could send some one of those girls down my room? I'm like, hey man, no problem. I was like, hey, any of y'all like Usher? Y'all want to go down there? So like a bunch of them, a couple of them raised their hands. So I sent them back down to the lobby. And like 10 minutes later, I hear a knock back on my door. They was like, hey man, nobody was down there or whatever. So then I get a call back from him. He's like, hey man, I'm sorry. You know, like I had a quick meeting or whatever I forgot about. So I'm about to head down the lobby now. Can you send somebody back down there? I said, hey, he called, just called and said, come back down there and meet him now. 5 minutes later, he back at the door, knocking on my door again. My phone rings. I'm thinking it's him. I'm about to ask him what type of games is you playing. It's a lady on the phone. She's a young man. Am I going to have to come down there? I'm like, who is this? She's like, this is Mrs. Raymond. Don't send any more whores down here to see my son. So I'm like, hey, I'm not going to talk that spicy to an adult, you know, to somebody's mother. So
right.
I put my security on the phone and let him talk to her or whatever. So it's like, this was after the whole flavor care. I'm like, yo, I'm sending just regular girls, you know, whatever. Man, you should have had that energy from Puffy.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yo, so I want to ask you, before we end the live, I'm going to ask you like a few more questions, and then I want you to give your shout outs and stuff like that. So this is a question I want to segue back into you when you were with the group, Drew Hill. Now, I watched a clip, and the guy, I believe his name was Hiram, right? He mentioned
Hiram.
Right. Now, he mentioned before, like in the TV One clip, he said, you guys, this now, my lady told me to ask you this, right? He said, you guys were stirring chocolate before y'all met him. What did he mean by this?
I was laughing because I remember that clip and the way that he said it was hilarious because he was really hot involved. Like you could tell he was mad when he made that statement. But no, what he meant was our first job was a place in the Harbor Place. And my buddy just sent me a picture from out, and he lived out in California. He sent me a picture. They still actually have one there because the one we had here is shut down now. It's a place called the Fudgery, which is though we made fudge.
Okay.
Like we worked in a job, and it's like you sing. You know how, I don't know if y'all Cold Stone, they do it, but some of the Cold Stone ice creameries, you sing while you make the ice cream and stuff like that. So like we sung and made fudge. Like we was basically like some Keebler elves.
Okay.
We sat there and sung, and we would take like songs that was on the radio, like hot songs on the radio, and we'd switch them and make the lyrics to be about fudge and stuff like that. Like we was actually, at the time that we were there, it was the number one branch of the franchise in the country, and they got them like all over the country. So we used to call it, our job title was singing candy makers. So we just sung there and made candy. So okay. That was the job we had. The reason why we all had that job is so that if we got an opportunity to go into an audition or something for a record company, They know we wasn't lying. You know, some places you say you got somewhere to go and your job might not let you off or whatever like that. They think you lying, but they knew what we did. So if we ever said that we needed time off to go do an audition or go to a record company or go do a performance or anything like that, we all work the same place, so we all could get off.
Right.
So that's what he was talking about.
Okay, okay. Now, in your opinion, what do you think caused the turmoil in the group around the time when you had left?
Really, the only turmoil was me. it was with me, for real. Because everybody else, as you can see, everybody else still together. They still rocking. They on tour now. Like,
Did Jazz leave at some point in time? Did he leave the group as well?
Oh, yeah. Jazz left at some point. But, yeah, I don't know. I can't really speak on his situation. Like, I know what it was for real, but I don't feel like, you know, like, that's not my story to tell, you know?
Right, right.
Put his business out there for real.
Right, right.
You know, like, that's on him if he want to talk about it or whatever. But as far as me, my whole thing was, you know, like, I came into it with one set of aspirations and goals. But it's like, I see the position that y'all got me in. And you know how sometimes you got a job and you have, like, the option to promote or to move up and stuff like that?
Right.
I didn't see no option for me to move up in that. Like, I feel like y'all got me where y'all want me at, and it worked for y'all, but it don't work for me, you know? And it was like when they did the Unsung, the same one where the clip with Hiram come from, they said, like, a couple times, they were different ones, and I'm gonna say, we don't know where it came from. He just up and out of nowhere, he just left. That's not true. Like, every album, I would make a list of things that I didn't like and that I think should be made different or made better. And they would sit there and say that we agree with you, even to the point where Cisco, once we started recording in his house for the last project, he put the rules that I put, he put that up on a wall. He got it like laminated and put it up on the wall in the studio. So he did know where it was coming from. It wasn't a surprise that I was unhappy, but it was just a surprise. I think nobody thought that I would actually take the steps to leave.
Wow.
And what actually ended up happening to make me leave, like I just said, I told you the story where the shootout was in Miami at the How Can I Be Down conference.
Right.
It ended up being a second shooting. What happened was we went over to do a European tour. And we went over to, like, we hit France up, we hit Germany up, we hit London. We used to stay in London, but we hit London up. And so what happened was when we got to Paris, the people in the city, when we got off the airplane, people met us in the airport because they knew, they always know when celebrities coming or whatever. So it was people in the airport that told us, like, y'all gonna be fighting tonight. And we like, why are we gonna be fighting tonight? They was like, well, you know, like, this different rapper and this rapper or whatever was just here and they was fighting. So we kind of brushed it off. We was like, man, these rappers sing certain songs that make everybody feel a kind of way. And make them feel like they tough or they want to fight and stuff like that. Like, we sing a love song. When we get finished singing, all that's going to happen is all the ladies going to be looking for which guy they trying to, you know, get with or whatever. All the guys going to try to look for which lady they want to take on. So we ain't really paying no mind. But what we found out later is that it was a group of people that would start fights with artists on purpose so that they could rock. Basically similar to the thing of what happened with Kim Kardashian overseas when Kanye had to, you know, like, get whoever to intervene to get that worked out. Basically a similar situation to that.
Okay.
So we performed, and sure enough, after the performance, one of the guys that was working at the venue or whatever, like, started an argument with one of the guys that was working with us, to the point where our security came in after the show. We all sitting in the dressing room plotting on what girls we sing that we gonna get when we do the meet and greet or whatever, you feel me? So then all of a sudden, his security runs to the back room and is like, hey, we need all y'all in the vehicles right now, right now. We're like, oh, we ain't even, you know what I'm saying? We ain't meet, greet, we ain't do nothing. He said, nah, of all that, we going in the cars right now. So we get in the car. Next thing you know, I don't know if you're a wrestling fan, but back in the day, they used to have this picture for the Royal Rumble, and they have, like, all the different wrestlers, like, and they're in the alley, so you might see Hulk Hogan with a mace in his hand, the right. Ultimate Warrior with a chain wrapped around his neck, where as though they just scrapping, like, all out war in the street is what the picture looked like. And we see that happening right outside the vans that we in. They locked us in the vehicles, and they stand out front of the vehicles, like, scrapping, yo. Like, it looked just like a battle royal on wrestling. And next thing you know, one of the guys that was with us took a walkie-talkie and busted one of the guys' heads that was one of the ones that he was fighting. So the guy, he was looked like he was like a like Saudi Arabian or something, and I guess whatever his beliefs is, he pointed to his head, to the blood. He's like, you see this? This means somebody had to die. So then next thing you know, they pulled out guns. We ain't had no guns. We come from America. We had to go through customs or whatever. Oh, nobody with us got a gun on them. They start pulling out guns. They start shooting. They shot holes in the window of the other van, not the van that we went in, but the other passenger van that we were traveling with. They shot through there, but all praise to the Most High, nobody got hit. And then they shut the electric fence so that we would be stuck in there. So the people really that was with the venue was working in cahoots with the guys who was doing these fights / robberies or whatever. So it was a lady that was with us. And that's why I got total respect for the ladies, man. You know, as long as they act in a respectable manner, I respect the ladies. Because it was a lady that was able to come through unnoticed and hit the switch to flip the electric fence back out so we could get back to the hotel. And wow. When I got back to the hotel, it was a young lady there. All through the grace of the Most High, it was a young lady there who had a crush on me or whatever, a fan or whatever. And she was, of course, she was French, so she was able to get on the phone and talk to the authorities or whatever. And we ended up having the National Guard for security for the rest of the tour, you know? Man. And man. So like the night before that, I had a talk with the Most High, and he was telling me, like, I was like, why is it that all the fans love this guy, they love this guy, they love this guy, but don't nobody pay me no mind? And I heard a voice, like, nothing spooky, I ain't see nothing, nothing ain't move or nothing, but I heard the voice come back to me, like, you never gonna get what you want, so you doing it for me. And I didn't pay it no mind, but then when that happened, I was like, man, I took that as like my calling to get out. And I said I was gonna leave when I heard that voice. But then when it didn't, I thought about the story of Jonah and the whale in the Bible, where Jonah told Noah to go to Nineveh, and he was hard-headed. And because he was hard-headed, the ship started shaking, and everybody could have died because he wanted Jonah out of there. So when that shooting happened, I was like, everybody in the group could have been killed because the Most High don't want me here doing this no more, you know?
Right.
And so, like, I came back, and I let them know. And then I said, I'll finish the tour. So then when we got to back to L.A., we were doing the Wild Wild West video. And when we was there, it's like, yo, that man ain't Will Smith. If you look at the video, like, you don't really see the group. All you see is Cisco. And so it's like, he ain't really want the group there. It don't seem like he wanted the group there. He just wants Cisco there. So I'm type person. I don't like my time wasted. I'm like, man, I could have been home. I had a girl with me in California. I'm like, yo, she kept saying, come on back to the hotel with me. I ain't doing nothing. We can go back to the hotel and do something. I'm like, yeah, you're right, but they wouldn't let me leave for real. And I'm like, man, no, I'm not having my time wasted like this no more, especially after what just happened. At first, because they tried to pitch the narrative that I left because people were shooting and I'm not used to that type of stuff. Man, my house has been shot at you before and I ain't moved. Not saying I'm no tough guy, but I'm just saying that's not why I left, because I'm like, I could have died. And, you know, like, it's not worth giving my life for no more because I'm not getting anything out of it. You know, right. So that's when I came on the bus and I played this song by John P. Key. The second day that we were supposed to shoot, I came on the bus and I played this song by John P. Key called I Bow Out Gracefully. And that was supposed to be my exit from the group. And I told him, I said, I still finish this tour we got going on. Cisco was like, man, if you're going to leave, we might as well get used to how it's going to be without you being here. So that's when I left.
Man.
And can I clear up one more thing? One more thing before y'all know you probably got some more stuff, but let me clear up one thing.
Go ahead.
Like I said, I watched that 95 South interview, and the dude, Jack Thriller, was on there. And he was like, I don't know, maybe I'm thinking about it now. Maybe he was supposed to be comedy relief or something. But he had reached out to me one time, and we had like a nice conversation for probably like 2 hours because he's friends with the group. I'm thinking that he just want to be a mediator and he want to see what's wrong and maybe try to help fix it or whatever. But I never heard from him after that. And he was on there saying that I told him that I left the group because they wouldn't let me take my shirt off. So I wanted to clear that up. What really was said was, I said from the day that I got back in the group, I was asked to basically like take lunch for the team. But whatever other member might not be as strong in this area, that I was the one that was supposed to go along with them so they wouldn't be the odd man out. I was saying that when we first started, I was small, just like the other two guys were small, but they asked me, Cisco personally asked me, yo, can you not take your shirt off? Because Jazz can't take his shirt off and it'll make him look bad if there's three guys taking his shirt off and only one got to keep theirs on, so can you keep yours on with him? That's what I was saying. And then when it came down to singing, I started the group. But then we did an interview. He did a separate interview with one of the radio DJs here in Baltimore. And he got on the radio and said Dan Nokia started the group. So I asked him, Andrew, I said, yo, what's up with that? He said, well, man, I can sing, you can sing, and Jazz can sing, but Nope don't sing like that. So we got to give him something. So it's like, it's always at my, I'm always the one that had to give up something to make somebody else look good, not look bad. But my weakness, not to make it sound like I'm perfect, because I'm surely not, but I'm good on the singing. I'm good on, I was good on the being sick at that time or whatever. Now, not so much, but hey, it's wintertime. I was hibernating. By springtime, I'll be back, right? Most of the time. But anyway, when it was like my turn, I can't dance at all. I'm not a dancer. Well, I could do like a little two-step or whatever, but I can't do choreographed dancing. Like, you can't give me a certain set of steps that we going to do and expect me to do it with you. I'm going to mess it up.
I want to ask,
was it a way out of that for me? Nobody ain't say, all right, well, I'm not going to dance with Wood because he kept his shirt on with me, or I'm not going to do this because he didn't sing because of me or whatever. So I'm just thinking, like, why is it that I can take one for the team for everybody, but when it's time for me, can't nobody take nothing for the team for me, or can't take no step down on nothing for me? You see what I'm saying? I don't even want to be like Mike from Boys to Men. You know, like, he had, like, scoliosis or whatever, but yeah, while the rest of them was jumping around dancing, yo was just walking through, popping through real cool with his cane. I was like, shit, get me a cane. We lie about everything else. Tell him something matter with one of my legs or something like that. You
right,
feel
right,
me?
Right.
Huffy already thought I was blind when he first seen us because we did a showcase. And because I can't dance and I had shades on, Huffy told the guy who discovered us, he's like, I think that's real clever that y'all got the blind guy in the group. So it's like, man,
wait,
yeah, I mean,
all
I
right.
took one for the team for everybody else, but nobody took it for me. That's the point I was making. Not, I left the group because they wouldn't let me take my shirt off. Like, that's
hey, all right. I was going to ask you this. Who was the one, apparently you didn't start it because you saying you couldn't dance. Who was the one that thought of that dance where y'all was hopping in the air with one leg?
Y'all remember? Francisco, he was the basically the choreographer for the group, and if anything needed fine tuning, then he would call in other choreographers to help him to show it to us or whatever, really to me, because I was the one that couldn't dance. But okay. Anyway, he started that because he said that Tell Me, once again, back to your first question, he said this Tell Me sounded like a church song. And it does, because it was church musicians on it. The guy who played the organ on there used to tour with the Winers, one of the greatest gospel groups ever. A guy named Benjamin Love, may he rest in peace. But he, when we first heard it, he was like, yo, this sounds like a church song. So he's like, what if we did this to it? And he just started doing like the regular church march that everybody do, like how the ushers and the deacons march around. But then he's like, suppose somebody did this. So instead of just doing a regular march, he started jumping. And he did it as a joke. But then when he did it, everybody that was from the record company was in the room, like, yo, y'all should do that. So then we had like whole rehearsals and stuff, learning how to do that. And for me, that was like torture. Yeah, like a drill sergeant in there. And every time I missed a step, because nobody else, they all could dance. Everybody else was doing it right. Every time I missed a step, he made all us get down and do push-ups or run in place and all this stuff. Like we really teased us like boot camp.
Wow.
Behind that, behind us doing that one little step or two, which most people probably seem easy. But my mother told me when I was really young that things that come easy for most people is going to come hard for you. And
right.
things that come hard for most people is going to come easy for you. So he was just like different. I personally think I'm autistic. Like I never took the test, but the more and more like videos and stuff I watch. And it's funny that Cisco alluded to it back in the day. Cause you remember that movie called Rain Man?
Yeah. Yeah.
I wanted that to be my name, yo, instead of Woody. I chose to keep my childhood nickname. I got the name Woody the day I was born. I chose to keep my childhood nickname. I kind of fought to keep it, but yo wanted me to be named Rain Man because he was like, yo, you act weird, but you really smart as shit, yo. Like, you know a whole bunch of shit, but you just ain't weird. So it's just like, that's just how I am, yo. It's like the things that come. So it's like when it comes to like things that the average person might take them a long time to write a song. Like, I sit there 5 minutes with a beat and I got the whole song pretty much written. You feel me? But when it comes to like easy stuff for people, even with talking and walking, I started talking at probably like 3 months old, but I couldn't walk till after I was like over a year old, you know? So I'm less like backwards. I operate backwards to most people. So like that dancing was not easy for me. And now to this day, like, you get me now, if I go to a little lounge or something like that, somebody having a birthday party, somebody I care for, I might hit a little two-step or whatever, but don't never try to tell me a choreograph, like, all right, I see you got the two-step, now we going to add a little kick to it, we going to add a little slide, we about to add shit, or I'm about to take a seat.
Right, right.
You feel me? Because that's just not my thing, for real. Right. But yeah, that was like torture. And that's really the first time I left the group is the first day that they added that same hop. Because I thought we was just going to do the cool little Jodeci bounce, you know? Like I said, we were heavily Jodeci influenced. I thought we just going to do the little Jodeci. You remember how they used to do that little bop? Right. Almost look like a church rock where they just rock back on one foot.
They called it
I
back.
That's all we was going to do.
They called it the bounce. They called it the bounce back in the day, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what they called us, a drill bounce. Yeah, so like once they added that and they started adding like choreographed steps and stuff like that, I went to the guy because we hadn't signed yet. Like, we had agreed that we was going to sign. I went to the guy that got us the deal or whatever, and I was like, yo, can I have $80? That's how much a train ticket on Amtrak was back then from New York to Baltimore. I was like, excuse me, can I get $80? And he was like, for what? I was like, I'm going home. He was like, for what? I was like, man, I ain't signing up for this. I was like, I thought we was going to be singing. I can sing all day. I can write us some songs all day. But when it come to this dancing, nobody never told me this was going to be a part of it. So I asked him for $80 then to go home. And he paid me to stay. He's like, nah, man, it's going to look bad. And three people came up and they met three and they fell in love. I mean, four people came up. They fell in love with y'all as four or whatever. And now when it comes time to sign, it's only three. You're going to mess it up for everybody else. So that's what made me stay, because I didn't want to make it bad for everybody else. But it was from that day that I really ain't want to be in it no more. Once they start that dance
of voices. Man, Mr. Woody Rock, man. Mr. Woody Rock of Drew Hill, man. I thank you for your time, man. I thank you for your time.
Thank you,
man.
Brother.
Thank you for your time. And this was a great interview. I want to shout some people out in the chat. You know what I'm saying? Before you go, they've been shouting you out here.
Oh, man. Let's see.
They said, Marilyn Mao said, Woody, I've been trying to reach you, bro. I don't know who Marilyn Mao is. They said they've been trying to reach you. Salute
hey,
to
you
Meryl.
Put my Instagram in the link, right?
Yeah, yeah. It should be, if you guys want to follow.
Yeah, hit the Instagram. Hit me and leave me a DM or whatever. And let me know what you want to talk about.
Okay, yeah, because I got Woody's Instagram information is in the description below of the video. If you guys want to follow him on Instagram or reach out to him, also his YouTube channel is Brother Woodrow, which is also in the description below. You have anything else you're working on? Any projects coming up? Anything you got going on?
Man, I'm just living, man. I'm living like free. Like the day that I left the group, like for real, like it was a pastor at a funeral for a brother from here in Baltimore called Big Tony. And when I went to his funeral, this is when the third album was, right before we did the third album. And he said, it's gonna come a time, I don't know if he put something on me or what, but he was just like, it's gonna come a time where you go on stage and all the fans are screaming, and you gonna go back to your room and you gonna scream, God. And during that time, right. And I thought, I did just what you did. I was laughing, but at the same time, I was a little bit scared. So then, like, from then on, it seemed like since that we went on tour for that album, I didn't know if I was going or coming. Like, I felt like I was separate from my body. Like, my mind and my body was in two separate places. And the day that I made the decision to leave the group again, and, like, even weird stuff would happen in the studio. We recording, and every time I went to record, the microphone would break. Everybody else sing their parts, everything was fine. The minute I stepped in the booth, the engineer be like, what do you come on back out? And I'm thinking it's because I'm singing bad or whatever. I get in the room, he's like, I can't get this mic to work. And so like all type of signs and stuff was coming. So when I finally sent the email, by the way, let me clear that up. I sent the email on the day of the Super Bowl Sunday, the year 2008, the year I left the group. I sent the email to the group members, letting them know I was not going to continue on with this album. It was one of their ideas to have me come to the radio station because they wanted a reality show, which they got. It was called the Platinum House, and it came on BET Century, not the regular BET, but BET Century. But that whole fight or whatever that was supposed to be at the radio station where I supposedly quit the group on air was all staged to help them to get this reality show, which they got. And then the original audio of the Unsung that they did, that was sent to me because I was supposed to have to approve the Unsung before it came out. Wow. That was in the original, but by the time it hit TV, the producers contacted me back and said that Heath Sweat wouldn't allow the footage to be used. And that's crazy to me because that footage was independent of Keith Sweat. Like, he used that footage on the Platinum House, but right. That footage is free ring on YouTube for people to see. But they said, blamed it on Keith Sweat. And so the whole narrative and the members admitting that was staged, they took all of that off of there. But that whole fight was staged. Like, come on, if anybody from Baltimore or Jay, you from New York. So you know, don't nobody fight like that.
Right.
Nobody say not one cuss word. Ain't nobody even swing no blows for real. Like, everybody just was grabbing and tussling. Like, that's not no fight. And it's funny because I saw other groups that have like reality shows, and I'm sure y'all know all reality shows is not really reality. I seen every singing group after that that had a reality show had a scene just like that. I seen D26, shout out to my brother. They had a scene that looked just like it. The other group, Brother to Brother, that had the reality show on BET, they had a scene just like, I'm like, dang, could somebody get royalties for a fight scene? But anyway, that wasn't real. I sent the email, and then the day I sent that email, get back to what I said, I felt my spirit come back into my body. And I feel like I'm myself all over again. So, yeah. So I'm just enjoying living in peace, man. I live a regular life, man. I work a 9-to-5, and I'm just happy. You know, like, sometimes having more don't make you happy. Also, I really didn't have more, because what you think I probably had, I don't have and never did. But it's just, I'm just living a happy, peaceful life and staying. I even got a shirt that say, out the way. I just stay out of everybody's way, man. Just mind my business. But when I do get an opportunity that I can say something that might enlighten my brothers and sisters, I'm all down for doing that. And what I do want to leave with everybody, man, if you are thinking about getting into the business, far be it for me to kill anybody's dreams, but I will beg you to, first and foremost, keep watching shows like this so you know what you're getting into, and also get books about the music business and how it really operates so you don't sign your life away, and so that you're just so happy to be there that you just sign anything that anybody put in front of your face. You'll be making, like they said on Cadillac Records, you'll be making them rich and you famous. And like Brother Marquise from True Live Crew said on the interview I seen him on, he said, fame without fortune is torture. And that's what I want to leave everybody with. If you got anything else, brother, I'm down to answer it. But that's my message, man. And seek the Most High first. Keep him first in everything you do. Truly let him guard your path, and you be all right.
Man, that's great words of wisdom, man. Great words of wisdom, man. I can't even lie. Oh, man, this was an epic interview, man. Epic interview. And I thank you again for giving me the opportunity, man.
Yes, sir. I can't think of nobody else I'd rather, you know, sit down with, man. Like, I'm literally, like, how people say, you know, like, they know your people work and stuff like that just because they would have. Just because they talking to them at the time, like probably a couple people that told me I was their favorite member of the group, but that's just because I was the only one that was sitting in the room with them. And then later on, once we get cool, hey, oh, you think you can introduce me to such and such? Hey, you think you're in such a house the next time you go? Hey, man, get out of here, man. You know what I'm saying? But no, I'm literally from the bottom of my heart, man, telling you that I got my notification bell set to your channel, and every time you put something up, I'm one of the first ones in there looking at it, for real. Now that you know my Instagram name, you can see me in your likes, for real. And know that I'm not lying to you, man. So to be able to, and really, I had already done interviews with like multiple different people on here and stuff like that. And I basically said I wasn't doing no more. I had told everybody, because a couple people reached out to me. It's like, man, I want you to interview us. Like, man, I feel like there ain't nothing new that I can say that hasn't already been said. But when I reached out to you, and you said you were interested in doing something, I said, man, I come out of retirement real quick for this brother, man.
Yo, I appreciate that, man. Salute, though, man. That's real. That's real, man. That's real, man. All right, Brother Woody, man. I'll be in touch, though, man. I'm going to call you after this live. I thank you for tapping in, man. Y'all please make sure y'all go and follow Woody Rock on Instagram, man. The Instagram is in the description of this video, as well as his YouTube channel. Salute to Tay Jules. He said he subscribed to your YouTube channel just now. He subscribed to your YouTube channel.
I appreciate you, man. It, I don't know when I'm going to do something new, but it's enough stuff on there. Like when we was young, we sang Good Times.
Yeah.
Good Times. I didn't know that Good Times was already all made by the time I was born, but all them episodes was new to me when I first seen them. So
right.
Girls say when they put their little pictures up when they turn to the side so you can see all their goodies.
Right.
They say old to me, but new to Facebook.
Right.
So like them messages is old to me, but they new to YouTube and new to everybody that's just coming on. So
for sure,
check
man.
Them out, man. Feel free to leave me a comment. Let me know what you think or whatever. We rap from there, man.
I appreciate you, man. Thank you so much, man, for tapping in.
Thank you, bro. Much love and shalom and blessings to you, man.
Peace, man.
Have bless your back coming up. Peace.
All right, you too. All right, y'all. I'm going to shout some people out. I'm sorry I couldn't shout y'all out midway of the interview. Salute to Goals to Gold. He said, Breakdown Prodigy, three stories. Hegelian Dialect, album part one and part two, After Death. I think he tried his best at the end to leave a message. Dissect the album. Let me know you read my super chat. Most definitely will break down more album covers for you guys. I got to just, you know, do my little research on a few of them. Every time you guys leave a comment on album covers, I'm definitely going to be breaking those down as well. I got to shout some other people out. As far as with the cash apps here, salute to Malia. Thank you so much, Malia 420. Salute Rashad. He said, for respect, man. Thank you. Thank you so much, man. And my man, Devin. Salute to Devin, man. Got somebody else I forgot earlier. Very important. I want to shout this person out, Miss Shanita Jones. Miss Shanita Jones, I thank you so much. I don't mean to say your last name, but I thank you. And I'm going to get to that video. She said, for the camera. All right. She holds me down. Okay. I thank you, Miss Shanita. I pray that everyone that donates, man, that you are blessed by the Most High tenfold, man. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, without this, man, none of this is possible, man. You know what I'm saying? None of this is possible. So thank you, Miss Shanita Jones. I'm gonna definitely get to that Farrakhan video for you. That's gonna be my next video I'm gonna work on, because you have greatly showed your appreciation for my channel and everybody else that has been able to donate as well and, you know, contribute to the channel. If you guys would like to help out and contribute to the channel, I will always shout y'all out on the following show. The link to all of my, you know, the Patreon and things of that nature is pinned in the comment section of this video. I would also like to thank Brother Woody Rock for coming on and sharing his experiences in the music industry while working with the group Drew Hill. All right. If you guys could make sure y'all go and subscribe to his YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/Brother Woodrow. And his Instagram, which is Woodrow_410. Make sure y'all go and support Brother Woody Rock, man. He could greatly use it, man. I ain't going to lie. Breakdown, Goals to Go said, Breakdown Hegelian Dialect albums. Substance, most definitely. I will, man. I most definitely will. Salute to Charles Wilson. He said, keep staying strong, Jay. As always, man. As always. So, yeah, I'm gonna take a few days off, y'all. I'm going to take a few days off. I'm going to bring some videos for y'all on Monday. If you're on the Patreon, I'm going to work on some content for y'all. I guess I ran out of data on the on Vimeo, so I got to wait for a few days before I upload over there. So I'm going to get to some more content. If you guys would like for me to break down any videos and you're on the Patreon, make sure y'all jump in the community tab and tell me what type of videos y'all want me to talk about. Also, like I said, all right, like I said, we got something very important here. Hold up. I want to just get this out the way. So if you guys on the Patreon or you want to sign up to the Patreon, we got the Obama and the Tafari Campbell conspiracy. This is very deep. All right, this young man drowned in the Obama's house. All right. Then we got transhumanism, a deeper history of transhumanism. Y'all want to talk about these Apple eyeglasses? I've been spoke about that already. It's up there. The dangers of the control of the robotic society, where we're seeing a lot of this technology constantly growing, and a deeper look into human cloning for all my clone heads out there. All right. I broke a lot of these topics down. So if you're on the Patreon, you can go to my collections tab where you'll see a lot of these videos, and I'm breaking a lot of this stuff down. All right, so for everybody that has tuned in and tapped in, I thank y'all. I'm gonna shout some of y'all out real quick. Thank you again, Goals to Goals. Thank you, Charles Wilson, for your donation as well, your super chat. Thank you. He said, "Keep it Queens. You should know more than me." I try to, man. Salute to Luscious 310. She said, "Thanks for the interview, Jay." No problem. Purpose is everything. Salute to you. Dinklin UFO said, "Cloning is legal in China. Case closed." Yeah, it is. In other countries as well, too. Salute to Kyoko in the building. She said, "Thanks, Woody." Tay Jules, "Prodigy's second to last album before he died still gives me chills to this day. The Hegelian dialectic." Yeah, they had took that album off of Apple Music for a couple years. And then I guess, you know, you guys were out there, you know what I'm saying, making some noise about that album, and they had to put it back up. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know who is in charge of his estate, but that album is back up on Apple Music. Salute to Ill Individual, who said those albums are fire. All right, Jerome Brown was popping. Cassandra King, what's going on? He said, "That's right, keep your soul. Nothing is worth losing it. You'll just be used and lied to and still be broke. And them rich. Glad we heard this." Absolutely. Salute to Malia 420 in the building. My man BP, what's going on? Who else we got? I don't want to miss anybody. Lyric W. We got Lyric W. What's going on? SB Capone, what's popping? Miss Mocha K, where you been at, Miss Mocha K? I ain't seen Miss Mocha K in a minute. She tap in and, you know, show love whenever she can. Salute to you, Miss Mocha K. She's been a long time supporter as well. Who else we got? Cassandra King, Madison Williams, great interview, Jay. We need more of this. Yeah, I'm working on it, man. I'm gonna try to see if I can get as, you know, more people. DJ Spiral, what's going on? Thank you guys for this. Yeah, man. Heck Bowl, what's going on? Great interview, Woody. Salute. Mar R, how you doing, Mar R? Hope y'all having a blessed Friday, wonderful Friday, and a blessed weekend. Salute Brenda Lynn, staying stoic. Malik Smith, what's going on? And who else we got? Yeah, same people was commenting for the last couple hours, couple minutes. Tariq Lopez, what's going on? He said, "Wow, the energies didn't mix." Oh, yeah, y'all was talking about the interview. Salute Hot Rod. He said, "Hey, Woody, I'm one of he said, "Hey, Woody, you're one of my favorites from Drew Hill. Stick to continuing to live, to live drama and sucker free." Yeah, man, we have to, man. We definitely have to. Salute Big Stacks, Uncensored Truth, Josh Law, what's going on, and who, man? All right, y'all, Jamarcus Trunks was popping, Steve Sorby. All right, y'all, so, yeah, man, I just want to get y'all going real quick, man. Hope y'all have a blessed weekend and all of that. And like I said, man, stay out the way, man. Stay out the way. Oh, matter of fact, we should go live. We might go live tonight on Twitch too, y'all. If y'all on the Twitch or Patreon, make